הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה ונשמחה. הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה ונשמחה. הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה ונשמחה. הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה ונשמחה. אורו אורו אחים, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים, אורו אחים בלב שמח. Hello, everybody. This is Judge Eve with a wonderful guest today, author Rebecca Willman Gernon. And before we get to her story, first of all, I know my song says, let us be happy in Hebrew, but today we're all sad because of what happened in Newtown, Connecticut. And please agree with me in prayer for the parents, for the children, for everybody that was involved. And Lord, we humble ourselves before you. We thank you and praise you. You said whenever two or three of us shall agree as touching anything, it shall be done for us. And we thank you for giving comfort to those who survived, to strengthen the children's hearts who were there, to strengthen the parents' hearts to know that everything is under control, under God, and that somehow, 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 some good will come out of it. In Jesus' mighty name. And Lord, let the words of our mouth and the meditations of our heart today be acceptable in your sight. We thank you and praise you for it. And Rebecca, I'm sorry I'm crying, but I'm so happy to have you on.
Well, and I'm happy to be here, and I'm delighted that you pronounced my name right. Nobody ever gets my name pronounced right.
Great.
So that's did you see
I misspelled it in the title?
Oh, well, no.
You know what? I'm so not good with computers. You know, I typed the heading, and then later I saw I didn't include the E, the O rather, in Gernon, and I couldn't correct it.
Oh, well. That's quite all right.
Let me just
and as
introduce.
I think about those children in Newtown, Connecticut, my book, which is Amy Sines, A Mother, A Deaf Daughter, and Their Stories, I think any parent that has a difficult situation with a child, be it deafness, autism, or in this case, the sudden unexpected murder of your child.
Yes.
If you're a Christian, or maybe even if you're not, you ask, why me? Why did this happen?
Yes.
And I did that when Amy was born deaf. You know, there was a lot of, why me? And as a parent, and especially a mother, if you've given physical birth to your child, then you think, well, did I do something during pregnancy? Or didn't I do something during pregnancy?
You
and
know,
what
Rebecca,
brought this on?
This is probably why you're on today, because in God there are no accidents. Everything is a God incident. And look at the timing. The fact
I know
that
it.
This Right? The fact that it happened and the subject matter that you have. Let me just a little, I just want to give you a little introduction so people know who you are. Rebecca wanted to be a writer since she was a little girl. And what I love is that at age 11, she actually put out what's called Dolan News, like a little publication she sold for one penny. She had her entrepreneurial spirit even then. And you know what's interesting to me, too, that you got both your bachelor's and master's in psychology and counseling, which was in preparation for having Amy later on. You know,
absolutely.
I really, isn't that something? God is amazing. And, you know, her book is, again, Amy Sines, the story of a mother, of a deaf daughter, and actually both their stories. And what I am so amazed by, Rebecca, is that Amy has been so highly successful. And what I've been saying in the promotion for the show is, if she can be that successful, any one of us can be successful. Let me just say that she, too, has her master's degree. I'm so proud of her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a lecturer at the University of Nebraska, and she teaches how to sign. Is a Department of Special Education and Communication.
Correct.
And she teaches American Sign Language and the deaf culture. And what I love is she volunteers in so many things. She's part of the Cat House, has four cats herself, of whom three are deaf. It's unbelievable to me, you know? May I say one more thing?
Sure.
When I first had contacted you, I said, oh, you know, Rebecca, would you like me to pray for your daughter? And you said to me, no. So now let's go into your story. First, I asked you, when did you find Jesus in your life, or had you always been?
I was raised in a Christian family.
Wow.
I went to church and Sunday school ever since I was young. There's no time I can recall not being a Christian because I've always been a Christian.
And close to God.
And well, yes. Sometimes closer than others, let's be honest. We're all sometimes we're closer than other days.
Amazing, isn't it? Yes.
Yes. And as I was going to share about wanting to know the answer with Amy, I don't know how many hundreds of people have said, well, why was she born deaf?
Yes.
And I'm certain these parents that have just recently lost children are thinking,
yes,
you know, why did I do this? Well, when I first found out about Amy's deafness, I didn't understand my salvation as well as I should, even though
May
I was a Christian.
Were you very young at the time?
When Amy was born deaf, I was like 23.
So you were very young. Yes.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
So I understood Jesus was my Savior, but I always still felt guilty. As you grow in your faith, I think you really begin to understand what Jesus did for you, and you lose that guilt, and you become very, very grateful.
Exactly.
But at that time, I didn't ask God why, because I figured I'd committed enough sins in my life, I deserved everything under the sun happening to me. But my pastor was so good, he said, why would God punish you by hurting someone else?
What a good point. That's very important what you just said. Because remember, the Jews in the Bible said to Jesus, did this happen because of what her parents did or her ancestors, talking about a deaf and dim person, remember?
Yes, and he said neither.
Exactly. So go ahead, please.
And so those parents today that have lost children should think of this. It isn't anything you've done, you did, or you didn't do. It just happened. But I still wanted to know why Amy was deaf, just as much as I'm certain these parents want to know why their child was killed. And they may or may not live to find it out. But in my case,
Was she born deaf?
Did
you know it right away from the beginning?
No, because at that time they did not have neonatal testing like they do now.
Oh.
So Amy was 11 months old. But yes, she was born severely to profoundly deaf, has never heard anything.
Oh.
And as we got together with parents groups here and there when I was taking Amy to therapy, one of the groups, it was a bunch of moms, and we were sitting around, and of course the question always came up, how is your child, why is your child deaf?
Yeah.
And one mother said drugs, and she didn't expound, so I don't know whether it was something she took or whatever. Could have been. Another mother said that her child was born deaf, they knew, but it was premature, and the doctors or somebody had given it a blast of oxygen to help it breathe, and it got in the child's eyes, and it blinded the child.
Oh, my
Another
goodness.
Mother said that... She said, I had just been pregnant and lost the baby. I had a miscarriage. And so she said, when I got pregnant again, my husband and I knew almost to the day when I had gotten pregnant. And I had just, you know, I was only 6-8 weeks pregnant, and I was taking the carpool children home. And one of the kids in the carpool said, come up. You know, come and stop in the house. My mom wants to talk to you about the Girl Scout meeting.
Yeah.
So she said, I went up to the house with the little girl. And when I went inside, her younger sister had the measles.
And I was going to ask you about that, whether having measles causes children to be born deaf.
Yes.
If
the mother is pregnant with it, yes. And
at the time? You mean if you have the measles beforehand, it doesn't make any difference?
No. But it's while you're pregnant that it matters. Anyway, she got the measles. And abortion was not an option for her. And she said, so for the next 7 months, she said, as I carried this child, I knew it would have a disability. I didn't know whether it would be blind, deaf, retarded, worse, etc.
Do you know whether or not measles can cause any of these conditions or only deafness? Or do you know?
It can cause a variety, and that's why most people now don't get measles. They get the measles immunization, and it's very rare for a woman to get measles now when they're pregnant or even a child. But I thought then, I said, thank God you have not revealed to me why Amy is deaf, because I thought God knows me so much better than I know myself, because if I had been that mother that had gone into the house and got German measles, I know I would have beat myself entirely. I would have been angry at that family. I would have been angry at that little child. I would have thought, if I'd never gone into the house, this never would have happened, on and on and on and on. And so I am just...
You- forgive me for interrupting. It's just
That's quite all right. Questions come up.
Is it only German measles that can cause those disabilities or regular measles?
I think it's just the German measles, but I wouldn't want to say on that. Your doctor could tell you, but I know getting measles while you're pregnant is not a good thing at all. And then, of course, there's other things, an extremely high temperature in a baby and things like that. But I don't know why Amy is deaf, and you know what? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. You
God
know,
would
that
have let
is,
you know if he wanted you to know, so he didn't. Let, he
right.
did not
and
to this day let you know. But I can tell you why. Do you know why?
Why?
To show how successful a person can be no matter what disabilities they're born with. Because that's what you've done with your little Amy. It's incredible.
I think that's part of it. And I think the other part, which if anyone gets my books to read it, which they can...
How can they get it?
It's published by Gallaudet University, which is
how
the
do
only
you spell
university
it?
In... G-A-L-L-A-U-D-E-T.
Okay.
It's published by Gallaudet University, the only university in the world for deaf people to attend. They have it on their website, but you can go to Barnes & Noble or you can get it from Amazon.com.
Great.
You just type in Amy Signs, and it should bring the title right up, or, you know, Amy Signs, a mother's or deaf daughter and their child.
Let me spell it. You know, people hear words that don't always know how to spell it. So Amy's A-M-Y, A like apple, M like Mary, Y like yellow. Signs is like signing for in the deaf culture. S like Sam, I like igloo, G like George, N like noon, and S like Sam. So it's Amy Signs, and then the rest, if they put just those two words down, they can get the book, right?
They probably would, but if there's something else that would come up, if they start to type a mother, her deaf daughter, any of that, and they'll bring it up.
And their stories, because it's really both your stories together.
That's what makes it such a unique book, because most books about people with disabilities are written from either the parent's perspective, the person with the disability, or a professional, and you don't get the whole story.
That's
this
a very
at least has
point.
Two-thirds of the story, the parent's side and the person with the disability.
Yes. You know what I'd like you to go into a little bit, and forgive me, because these are questions that I want to know and maybe the listeners want to know as well. What did you go through? Because you told me briefly, you know, that it wasn't exactly peaches and cream the whole way. When did you find that you had a deaf child? You say she was 11 months old. Maybe tell us at the beginning, how did you train her? How did you react with her? And maybe we'll go through stages.
Okay, well, she was...
Yes.
When she was 11 months old, she's my second child. I have an older son named John. And
he's not deaf.
No, he's perfectly fine, as normal as anybody is normal. But anyway, second children, mamas don't get around to doing the baby books as soon as they do the first child.
True.
And she was 11 months old, and I was getting around to work in her baby book, and one of the pages was baby's first word, and I thought, geez, Amy doesn't say anything. I thought, well, maybe they don't, you know, so then I drug out John's baby book, and I looked, and at that age, he could say, like, mama and dada and bye-bye, you know, just simple little words,
it's
and I realized.
Rebecca, that means that really speech is affected also by the inability to hear, huh?
That's the main way that people in the past determined that someone was deaf was that if you don't hear your language, you don't speak it. Like most of us don't speak Chinese because we don't hear it.
Right.
And
so
we wouldn't speak English if we didn't hear it.
Have you come to learn how does that child feel on the inside that they don't speak? Has there been any studies on it or have you observed anything?
You know, this again would come down to one point that I try to make in my book and when I speak, which is acceptance. And if you don't accept this that your child is this way, whatever the disability is, be it autism or paralysis or cerebral palsy or whatever, if you don't accept it, your child will not accept it. And my definition of acceptance, and this is only mine, but it works for me and it may work for some of the listeners, is acceptance does not mean you like the situation.
Yes.
Because no one would say, like those parents in Newtown, no one would say they were glad they don't like the fact that their child was killed. I did not like the fact I had a deaf daughter or people who have autistic children or paralyzed children or whatever the disability. Acceptance does not mean you like the situation, but You no longer spend your time, energy, and money trying to change the situation. Instead, you take constructive steps to adapt to it.
Let me say a couple of things. If people want to call in, I'd like to give the number. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Let me add also that Rebecca is available for speaking, and people can reach you. Shall I give your web address? Would that be the best way to contact you?
Amy Sines is probably the best way to reach me.
Okay.
Or they can look at my web address, but email, I just use the title of my book, amysigns@cox.net.
Perfect. Okay.
Of course, today the email's down, but I will get that email sooner or later.
You should get it through the cloud, right? They have everything reserved in the cloud.
Well, I think my cloud's a rain cloud over here today. I'm not getting anything.
It should bring it to you more quickly, you know.
Right.
But also, I wanted to say also that you'd worked for the Federal Communication Commission. I'm so impressed with your background.
Oh, yes, many years ago.
And with your daughter. You know, the question I asked, though, what I meant to ask really is, how does the child feel? Have you found out what Amy was feeling as a baby when she could not communicate?
Well, of course, children don't have a great deal of remembrance until they're older, but by the time she's 2 and 3 and we're trying to make her be oral and speak, which is what the philosophy of the time was, it wasn't working because she was extremely frustrated. I mean, she would make noises and do something over and over and would say some sound over and over and over, and none of us could figure out what she wanted. And
See,
she was frustrated, and I was frustrated, and I read this book. My mother had sent me a very good book about a missionary in the Orient, and I wish I could remember the name of the book, but I have no recollection. But anyway, this missionary said that when they went to this country, I think it was in Indonesia or China, they spent their first 6 months or a year there trying to teach the people English so that they could read the Bible and teach them, et cetera. And then they came, this wasn't working. They weren't being able to share the word of God. They weren't being able to do anything because these people probably didn't read and write in their own language, let alone a foreign one. And the woman that was writing the book said, I came to realize that learning someone else's language is a gift of love, and it shows how much you care for them. So they commenced to learn the language of the native people. Then they were able to bring them the gospel. And I read that, and I thought, I'm going to have to learn Amy's language, whatever her language is, which is the American Sign Language, which is the language of a visual language that the deaf can see. I thought, I got to learn her language because I have to talk to her. I have to be able to communicate with my
daughter. Let me ask you this. Why did you know that she would know sign language?
Well, she wouldn't know it until she was taught it.
So it was to be taught. That's what people need to know, that you have to. I think I mentioned to you, I'm so amazed, my grandchildren who are hearing kids, my son and his wife taught them sign language because it was found that babies, even when they cannot talk, they can sign.
Absolutely.
You know, so I thought that was amazing. So go ahead, please.
It is because it's visual, and we recall things that we see. And since a deaf person can't hear, do you want ice cream or do you want a cookie? If you make the sign for ice cream or cookie, they can see that. And we visually remember things better. And especially if you don't hear, you're going to have to rely on your visual.
Pictures worth a thousand words.
And you're
words.
Very right about teaching young babies words. That I met somebody on the airplane, and they were telling me when I told them about my book, they said they'd taught their child that. At 6 months, the child could tell you whether they wanted milk or they wanted something else.
Exactly. Isn't that amazing to me?
It is.
They can't talk anyway yet, you know, so why not teach them how to communicate?
That's right. I think it's phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. And, you know, the maybe you should do the same. The girl who was on those DVDs, she's so alive, her child was deaf. And that's, I forget her name, and she's the one who did the sign language tapes. Have you ever seen them?
I've seen a variety of sign language tapes, and I've supported for some time. There's a really good mission called Deaf Missions out of Council Bluffs, Iowa, which provides tapes and the whole Bible in sign language for deaf people.
Really?
And daily devotions and a lot of really good things for deaf people.
Wow.
So even though the deaf won't be listening to our broadcast, one of their family members might, and they might want to get in touch with Deaf Missions.
And they can translate it into sign language for
yep.
them?
They have the whole Bible on tapes in sign language, on videos.
I wish I'd known it ahead of this, because I've contacted some, you know, organizations who help mm-hmm. the deaf. I wish I'd known about that so we could have it done. Well, maybe they can listen to the show and have it done and have it available, you know, because
yeah.
the show is archived. So
right.
go ahead. So how did you go about teaching her sign language? Where did
well,
you go?
I just got a book at the library that showed
oh.
the signs, and
yes.
like I guess most parents teach a child the speech, you start kind of with nouns, the names
right.
of things,
right.
and that's what I probably, you know, worked at, you know, learning names and some verbs and,
yes.
and a lot through pictures and things. And I realized that teaching language is so complex.
Exactly.
Like if you take the word airplane,
yes.
somehow you have to convince the child that the printed word airplane, the thing in the sky of which there are many different varieties, a toy
yes.
airplane and a picture yes. in the book, all of these things are airplane.
Wow.
And, I mean, and I never really thought of how complex
yes.
language was until I was starting at the bottom and working up.
To show them how to connect the different images as being one and the same, no matter how
right.
they appear. And you know something? Your background in psychology and counseling, I bet, came in very, very handy as you were doing.
It came in handy because I had to find something to motivate Amy.
Yes. And when I see her, because I'm a seer, I see her sitting, she's blonde, right? Or at least in the
right.
picture,
yep.
she's blonde.
Mm-hmm. She's
I see
blonde.
Her sitting cross-legged and intent. Is she blue-eyed, too?
Yes.
Yes, she's beautiful. And I see her cross-legged looking at you intently, and I would say it about two and a half. Does that
probably.
Sound?
Probably, yeah.
That's the way I'm a seer. You know, God shows me inside people the past, the future, you know. But she was very, very intelligent is what I feel, and she was just intensely.
Oh, yeah, she was
yes.
very smart and very inquisitive.
Ah.
And so mm-hmm. that probably helped. But the only thing that would motivate her was food. And denying And she's not overweight, so it wasn't
no.
like she was overweight or underweight. Now, her
yeah.
brother could be motivated other ways, but to get Amy to speak, I
yeah.
had to, you know, to begin to comprehend what we were doing, I would
yes.
deny her dessert or something
oh.
and make her speak. And the first
work
time I
for
tried
it,
to, yes.
she had to work for it. And, you know,
that's
it's
right.
so you use whatever it will take, right?
Right. And motivation,
yes.
some children
yes.
are motivated and...
Yes.
Some aren't.
Gay.
But,
mm-hmm.
but I hope these parents of anybody who's got
yes.
a child with a disability will work
yes.
towards their own acceptance. Because what I found really interesting, we spoke a while back, and Amy's godmother drove 300 miles to hear us speak, and she's mentioned
yes.
in the book Marge Beatty, and she was a deaf educator.
Oh, wow.
And she said... You know, the town that she lived in, someone there had a 21-year-old son who was a high-functioning autistic person.
Wow.
And yet he had, within the last month, killed himself.
Oh,
and
no.
she said, I realized, she said, when you were talking about feelings,
yes.
that family must have got stuck on one of
oh.
the feelings and never got to acceptance. And I said, my guess would be it was anger. They were angry that they had a child that
oh.
required a lot of extra help and
oh.
they couldn't do and the child couldn't meet their dreams. And the child
yes.
would sense all of this. And even though he was 21 and quite
yes.
accomplished for someone with autism, if
yes.
you've grown up in a family where you kind of get the feeling that everybody wishes I was something
oh.
else,
oh,
you probably
oh,
would move to, I might as well be dead. Yes.
Right.
And
you know,
so Amy never felt that.
May I say something, too? Do you feel
sure.
people with disability, I feel, are more sensitive, they're more feeling-oriented because it's one other method of communicating? Have you found that to be true with Amy?
I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think Amy... She has difficulty, obviously, being left
yes.
out of a lot of things. And
yes.
But I don't think in her immediate family she feels very accepted. And I think some people
yes.
with disabilities don't feel that acceptance anyplace. I mean,
so
the world is cruel. The world out there,
course.
I mean, we know.
We know.
They're
we
mean
know.
And nasty.
Right.
But if the parent accepts the child and accepts what their limitations are,
yes.
the child's going to thrive. I mean, I gave up on having
yes.
Amy talk like you and I are because I knew that
yes.
would never happen, and
yes.
I would make her life miserable and my life miserable trying to make her do that any
yes.
more than you would make someone's life miserable if you focused on the fact they couldn't walk
their disability.
Why not focus on their abilities, right, which they can use their hands, they can use their minds, they can use their upper body, et cetera.
And you're talking about unconditional love, that no matter who they are or what they do, we love them anyway, right?
Which absolutely.
Is what Jesus said we could do because he did it. So see, that was your lesson in showing her God's love, wasn't it?
I guess. I never thought of it that way. I didn't think of a lot of things. In fact, one little thing I'll share that was in the book was, you know, my road was a kind of a hard row to hoe there because I didn't know anybody else who had a deaf child, and I was alone, and I had to convince the school system to take her at a young time, and it was a really a real struggle to
go in. They wouldn't take her? They wouldn't take her?
They had a preschool program, but they wouldn't take preschool deaf children until they were five. And I said, well, that doesn't do her any good. She needs to be now in preschool education, because if we don't work on her speech now, we wait 5 years and now she'll be 5 years behind everybody. It was quite difficult. But and shortly thereafter, another mother who lived about 20 miles away got enrolled in the program, and I said, well, was it difficult for you to get Tina enrolled? And she said, no. She said, all I did was come and show my birth certificate, her birth certificate, and that was fine. And I thought, I, you know, worked enslaved. And then it came to me later that God had used me. I had gone in there first because this mother was not as aggressive as I was. Yes. She probably would have been told no and gone home.
You know
where
what?
They told
way...
me no, and I thought, no, that's not the answer.
You're a way paver, you're a way shower, you're a breakthrougher. You know, this is what prophets do. You know, they go through all the heartache so they can teach others to do it more
and
easily.
And it was a very humbling experience, Eve, to realize that, I mean, I never felt, we all know that we're supposed to have a purpose, but very rarely do we ever get any insight into our purpose.
Right.
And I felt, at least there in that one instance, God had used me to open the door for other people who would follow.
We go. A breakthrough. You know, you see what I'm saying?
And it'd be a battering ram, so to speak.
You tell me. You know, you hit your head against the wall, you hit your head against the wall, you finally make crack, you walk through it, and then it makes a way for all the others.
Yeah, and the next ones, they just come through like there was nothing at all.
Exactly. And, you know, a friend of mine once said, Eve, what if we said yes to God about all of this before we were born? And I said, how dumb can one get?
That's right.
You know?
It would have made it easier.
You know it deep inside of you because you knew what steps to follow anyway, even though they were not easy.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like you to tell us is how you got Amy to learn the sign language, how long did it take her, and how did she act in school? How did that affect her one way or the other?
Well, the sign language, of course, is like learning a spoken language. You learn it one word at a time and by use, and I taught her what I could. But when she was 4 years old, she went away to the Nebraska School for the Deaf, which is a residential school for the deaf. It was 150 miles from our home.
Wow.
And so she went away to college at age four. She boarded there during the week and came home on weekends and vacations, just like a college student do.
Yeah.
And so that is where, you know, her language really, really flourished, like it would for any child when you go to school and you start reading and doing a lot of other things. That school used total communications, which meant the teachers spoke and they signed at the same time. So you had a chance to learn visually or audibly, whatever
and
way.
Lip reading.
Which is very, very difficult. You know, any deaf person or hard of hearing would tell you that lip reading, they only get maybe 30% of the words in the sentence, and then they try to guess what you're talking about. It isn't that they see what you're saying word for word. They don't. They see a word here or there.
Do you know why? I know that it's because, you know, like in legal cases when, you know, witnesses try to make out what was said on a video when they can't hear the sound, it's so hard to really follow what's being said, even though you see the movement of the mouth. But let us take a little break now. We have a little commercial, and you and I will get a chance to talk when we're off. So we'll be back in a short time. Hello, this is Judge Eve Ellingwood, known also as Cohen Sternlight. I'm so glad to be on bbfsradio.com every other Saturday, like this Saturday, June 2nd. I have a website, www.90210, holocaust.com. That's HOLOCAUST.com. The story of my parents' murder in Beverly Hills by my brother and sister and the theft of their millions. I've written a couple of books, but one of them is available on the website as an e-book, Diary of Sabra Faith in Action. Also, I am a prophet, I am a seer, and I am a healer, and if people are interested, I can set up appointments to help people for a fee, and it will depend on what's involved and what has to be done. And to reach me, you can reach me by my email, eejudgeeve79@gmail.com. That's E like elephant, E like elephant, J U D like David, G like George, E like elephant, V for victory, E like elephant, 79@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you and hearing what else you would like to hear on the show and what help you might need. Also, legally, especially for people who are unemployed, I can help. I cannot give specific advice, but I can help. Maybe also political issues and other legal issues and spiritual issues. Thank you. Look forward to hearing from you. Hello again, everybody. We're so blessed today to have author Rebecca Willman Gierman, the mother of a deaf child, and with the book Amy Signs, the story of a mother of a deaf daughter, and actually both their stories. I want to repeat again, if anybody wants to call in, our call-in number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And to get Rebecca's book, Rebecca Gernon, you can either go on Barnes & Noble or Amazon or email her directly at amysigns, A-M-Y-S-I-G-N-S, at cox.net. And I wanted to continue telling us how Amy did and, you know, how Amy succeeded in what she did. So go ahead, Rebecca. You were telling us about how she really was college educated already at the age of four.
At age four, she basically went away to college because it was a boarding school, and it was.
Right.
And when she was in the third grade, she had her first teacher who was deaf.
Oh.
And up until then, the only deaf people Amy had seen at the school worked in the kitchen or were janitors or whatever.
Oh.
But when she saw this teacher that was deaf,
yes,
she then realized that a deaf person can do whatever a deaf person wants to do.
Which means any person can do, right?
Right.
Anybody can do anything. I don't care what abilities or disabilities they have.
Right. But when you have disabilities, you often feel that your life is limited. But those limitations are generally put on by yourself or your parents or a teacher, someone else.
Right.
And while she was at that Nebraska School for the Deaf, of course, they had a library there, and she saw the college annuals from Gallaudet University, which is who had published our book, and some of her teachers, of course, had gone there, and she saw them in their yearbook and wondered what it was like, and they encouraged her to go there. They said, you go to college, you'll understand all of these things. And
now, was she gifted in any particular area, either math or reading, or do you know?
She's very athletic, but she was a deaf All-American volleyball player.
Wow.
Tell us.
Wow.
She loved to do sports in high school and school because they lived in a dorm. And like most kids, they wanted to get away from the house parents. And so if they went and did athletics, then they would be around a different bunch. And so she played basketball and volleyball and track.
With
she was
deaf
a cheerleader.
People or also with hearing?
All deaf.
Deaf people.
But they played against, they played against hearing schools as well as deaf schools. But their team was, of course, Nebraska School for the Deaf.
And how did they communicate with each other? Again, by sign language?
Always sign language.
Wow.
Just sign language. They got along absolutely just fine, you know, no problem. Amy does anything that a hearing person does except speak fluently.
Okay.
You know, she drives a car. She's driven a car forever. She's traveled on, she's made... five of the continents. She hasn't been to Africa or Antarctica.
By herself?
With other friends. Not in groups, with other friends and stuff.
Wow.
She's two friends.
Just like anybody. just like anybody would.
Yep.
Right?
She and a girlfriend went to Australia for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And
wow.
She went on a tour to China because that's about the only way you can go there. But the other, there were only three of them that were deaf. The rest were hearing.
Wow.
And nothing stops Amy
from
doing
anything.
How
did they understand the tour guide explaining what they were seeing?
They pick up brochures and read them. Most places you travel, there are brochures, or they have travel books.
Yes.
That, you know, that they can buy ahead of time. I mean, we traveled a lot when she was younger, and I think that's part of why she and my son both loved to travel, is we did a lot of traveling.
You, as parents, as a family, you mean?
Right.
That
and
is so wonderful. Yes.
And we tried to do things that were very visual for Amy.
Oh, like what?
You know, like well, instead of going to some tour where you would have to go with a guide that would sit there and yak about things all the time,
yes.
We would take self-guided tours. I know one place she really liked was Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. Again,
wow.
It was a place you could go through and enjoy. And we've been
yes.
through a lot of museums because museums are pretty much self-explanatory. There's
yes.
usually a little bit of signage you can read and understand
yes.
what the display is about, which would be far more interesting to her than
yes.
some walking
somebody talking.
Tour.
Exactly.
Yes. She would miss out on so much and be bored.
Right. This way she could take in whatever information was interesting for her and, you know, doesn't
right.
need to hear it from anybody else.
And also
amazing.
We plan
yes.
these trips enough in
yes.
advance that both of my children were expected to read the brochures and read where we're going, and they got to select some of the places that we went. And that way then, that was a good practice for them to, you know, where we're going to go and what we're going to do. Here's your options. You get to choose one thing or two things or three that we will absolutely do, you know, and that way then they became involved in it.
But also a smart mommy.
Yeah, well.
I'm
but
just,
then, you know,
way,
they know that they're going to get to do something that they absolutely want
yes.
to do.
Yes.
I mean, I think they take a little more interest in what's
yes.
going on or whatever.
Absolutely. You know what I did with my kids? We had, like, motorhome trips. I had them read all the information about each location. And then
mm-hmm.
I had quizzes. So I'd have my four children and two friends. So the oldest always got the first prize. I had to give booby prize for the youngest, you know, so they wouldn't get discouraged.
Well, we didn't have a test to follow, but we did have places that we
yeah.
were, you know, that we chose to go, and everybody could choose several,
good.
But everybody would have what I would call a non-veto item, which means even if you didn't want to go there, you know, if that was your one non-veto item, we would go there no matter what we thought of it, we would go, you know. And
then
so, I mean, it made it
asked,
kind of a fair for everybody.
Oh, it's wonderful. You had a democracy to some degree.
Well, somewhat of one. But I
did. Yes.
Somewhat of one.
I just want to add that you're also a member of the
Southern Christian Writers Guild.
That's in New Orleans, which is where you live now.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to do is to have you tell us what Amy has accomplished, and I'd like for you to tell us why you wrote the book. So can you tell us?
Well,
Amy's,
you've mentioned already, she has a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, and while she was working on her master's degree, she was also teaching a school, you know, a class at Kendall
High School.
No, these were preschool, little kids in Washington, D.C. She was there and taught at the Kendall School, which is part of the Gallaudet University campus. She taught there and worked on her master's. Then she went to New Mexico and taught school there for a year, and it was junior high age kids, and she said that was enough of that. And since then, she's always worked at the college level.
But you know, does she teach hearing students or only deaf students?
She teaches now only hearing students. At that time, at the New Mexico School for the Deaf, it would have been deaf students. Then she worked for another several years teaching at a program that, believe it or not, was trilingual. It was at the community college in Santa Fe, and so they had to do English, Spanish, and ASL. So some of these were Spanish deaf people that were taking classes.
Is she able to speak normally? Does she have a speaking ability now in addition?
Well, everybody can make vocal noises. Amy does speak, but she rarely speaks around anyone but family because her speech is, for us, it's okay to listen to. Other people would find it difficult, and she's kind of self-conscious. And it is her second language. It would be like us being forced to speak in a foreign language.
I know what that is like.
Yes.
I'm born
and
in
so
Israel, you know.
She just doesn't speak to any great extent, you know, around us she will, but that's about it.
So when she teaches...
She teaches strictly hearing students.
How does she do it with sign language with them?
Yes. You know, you get into her class and, you know, you better be paying attention right away. She has, she told, this is kind of funny, my daughter has a wicked sense of humor, and at the University of Nebraska, American Sign Language counts as a foreign language credit. It does at a lot of colleges. And so she has a lot of the football.
We have a call. Did you say we have a call, Doug?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, caller?
Yeah. What is it? Yeah, this is Terry calling from Pueblo, Colorado.
Yes. Do you have a question?
I have a question. I do. I have a question about deaf education and how it's changed since the 70s and 80s when Amy was at Nebraska School for the Deaf.
What her
contribution is to that.
That's wonderful. Rebecca, do you have an answer?
Okay, well, I can answer. Amy, and like most deaf people, is very much against mainstreaming. That mainstreaming does the deaf a rather disservice because they're put in classrooms where they either have an aide assigned that is giving them their class lessons in ASL, but it's very difficult. Amy was not mainstreamed into hearing students until she was in college, and she said it was so difficult to keep your eyes on the ASL interpreter, and you couldn't see who asked the questions and what other students were doing because you had to constantly watch the interpreter.
What is ASL when you say
American Sign Language.
Oh, AS like Sam L. Okay.
Yeah, ASL.
How is it different from the 70s and 80s till today?
Well, in the 70s and 80s, most deaf people were educated strictly with other deaf people. Now most of these deaf students are tossed into the regular public school, of which they may not ever see any other deaf children, so they don't learn skills. They don't have an opportunity to be in social organizations. Many of the deaf themselves, I would say the greater share of them, would prefer that there was not the mainstreaming. I know as a parent, I had to fight to keep her in the Nebraska School for the Deaf. They wanted to mainstream her, and I said no. And I have a feeling that's what this caller, Carrie, is talking about.
Is that what you, does this answer your question, Carrie?
Yeah, this is Terry. I know Rebecca, and I wondered when she's coming to visit us.
Oh, Carrie! My Carrie in Pueblo!
Yes.
First part of March, Terry. I'm going to come down and do something in Pueblo.
Thank you.
All right,
so I'll
talk to the community colleague about speaking. And that was my question. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you for calling. Have a great day.
Well, some people do listen to my emails that
you
I said,
see?
Listen to me.
You see?
Yes.
You never know. Right.
That's right. And that's interesting because then, you know, like I said, Amy teaches only the deaf. I mean, only the hearing at the university.
Hearing.
And many of them, she says, are football students. And so when she was encouraging parents to learn sign language, and a lot of parents of deaf will say, oh, it's too hard or it's this, that, or the other. Amy said, I teach football players to sign.
Wow.
You know how dumb they are.
How come she has football players? That's very interesting to
because,
me.
Because depending upon what course of study they may be following at the university, they may be required to take a foreign language. And this is probably a somewhat simpler foreign language because you don't have to learn to speak it or write it. Where in Spanish, so you'd have to speak it and write it and everything.
Sure.
And here
and
you
read it.
And read it. And you're right. So you get off on one thing here, you know. And so they may be taking it for that reason. So she teaches just hearing students.
Incredible.
And she teaches full-time at the university and part-time at a community college.
Wow. And so also she's very active in volunteer organizations. Can you tell us about that?
Her main volunteer now, although she does do some judging for deaf contests and one thing or another, her main activity now that she does, because she has such limited time, she works one afternoon a week at the Cat House, which is a no-kill cat shelter.
Oh.
And you said three of her cats are deaf? Yes, three of her cats are deaf.
How does she communicate with them? That's so interesting.
Sign language. They do sign language.
And they understand it?
Yes, they do. Oh, believe it or not.
Oh.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I've seen her do it. She'll have all the cats downstairs in the basement with her.
Yes.
And she will say, go up, and make the gesture with her hand to go up. And all three of these little cats just go ripping right up the stairs.
Oh, and how do they respond to her?
They go, well, they don't hear. So
yeah.
They just come by her like any other pet would when they want attention. You know, they want to, you know, they come up and rub against your leg and you know, like anybody with cats. One of her cats, I can share this. This is kind of funny.
Yes.
She, one of the cats she got in New Mexico, one of the deaf cats, and it was a stray.
So you're Spanish speaking?
I don't know if it was or not, but it was. Anyway, I said, well, what did you name this kitten, Amy? And she said, well, I named it Deffy.
Oh,
and I said, Amy.
Yeah.
I said, Deffy, that's not a very nice name for this poor little kitten. And Amy said to me, which only a deaf person could say this and get away with it, well, can't hear anyway. So it doesn't know its name. So I thought, well,
but
I guess
it signs. It,
yeah, but it didn't know its name is Deffy, so it does
funny.
Just fine.
Funny.
And but you did ask why I wrote the book, so I ought
that's
to tell
what I was going to ask
I wrote
just
the book.
Exactly.
You know, when Amy, when I found out that Amy was deaf, I immediately, you know, went to my library to see what I could read. And the only books I could find primarily were written by parents. And I remember one especially. This mother said she put her deaf son to bed every night after 6 months and said, oh, I love you, Jimmy. Mommy loves you, Jimmy. And she said this every night. And she said after 6 months of saying this, Jimmy said, I love you, Mommy. And he started to talk, and everything was wonderful. And I'm reading this, and I'm going, my life, nothing like this at all. And I thought, if this woman wrote this book to be encouraging, it was the most discouraging book I had ever read, because I thought, nothing like this is happening. And I'm certain anyone who's listening that has a disabled member in their family is going, oh, nothing ever went easy. And I vowed, and that was about 37 years ago, I didn't say I vowed it to God, but who else would I make this vow to, I guess, that someday I was going to write an honest book of what it's like to raise a child with a disability. Because statistics, and I think I got these statistics off the March of Dimes page, 90% or more of the children that are born with a disability are born to parents that don't have that disability.
Interesting.
And
wow.
So that you are totally unprepared to deal with this situation.
You know, I'd like you to share with us a little bit some of the difficult time you've had with Amy, because you said you've had some frustrating times. You know, we've heard some of the good, and maybe if you share a little bit what was frustrating and how you overcame it. Yes.
Well, perseverance. Toilet training a deaf child was really difficult, because you can't seem to tell them. Teaching them to drive is a real experience, because to sign to them, they need to look at you, which means they take their eyes off the road.
Yes.
So that's very exciting right there. Amy also, as any, she learned probably by the time she was four, if I was angry at her, and she could tell by my expressions as well as anything else, she would put her hands over her eyes, and then that made her basically deaf and blind. Like, hearing kids would stick their fingers in their ear, she would put her hands over her eyes and shut me out completely.
You see, this is what I'm talking about, the higher sensitivity, which is what I have experienced in deaf people. But go ahead, please. Go ahead.
So that was one thing that she would do. I mean, I thought it was kind of funny, but it was very frustrating as a parent, you know, or whatever.
Of course.
She was just a very determined child, which worked to her advantage to some extent. But I mean,
to raise her, no. But later on in life, yes.
Yeah, wanting to throw tantrums and whatever, you know. I mean, I can give one example. I went out to get the mail. We had curbside mail. My children were like 2 and 4 then. John was 4. Amy was 2.
Yeah.
I leave. By the time I'm coming back into the house, I can hear them in there screaming. I'm thinking, I'm gone 15 seconds, you know. And I come in, and Amy is laying on the floor, kicking and screaming, and John is standing over her, just sobbing his heart out. And I said, John, what is it? You know, what happened here?
Yes.
And he said, well, Amy kept saying something over and over and over, and I couldn't figure out what she wanted, and she wouldn't stop. So he had taken his fist and hit her. And I said, and Amy wasn't hurt. She was just madder than a wet hen.
Okay.
So I put my arms around John, and I hugged him, and I said, John, I know how frustrated you are, because I get this frustrated too. But we can't take it out by hitting Amy. And he was crying because he felt so bad that he'd hit his sister, because they are so close together.
Do you cover that in your book about how siblings...
Yes, I do.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
And so then I drug Amy up off the floor and swatted her on the butt and said, you can't behave like this. Now, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. Just stand up here. I mean, but, you know, John was the one who was so devastated by what he had done. He felt so badly what he done.
Yeah.
But they are very, very close. They always have been. They both live in Lincoln, Nebraska. They live about 2 miles apart. They see each other a lot. They're very close with each
other. That is so special. And Steve, that's what I wanted you to talk about also. How do siblings get affected by a child who's either deaf or has another disability?
Goes back to the acceptance. If the parents accept the child, the child's going to feel accepted, and the other members of the family are going to see this as no different than anybody else. This is just somebody who does something different.
Right, right.
But the bottom line is the parents have got to set the tone in the family, which would be the same way with, you know, Christian religion instruction or anything. The parents, you know, have a great deal of influence in the child's life until they're 18 and they can choose differently. But by then there may already be some destructive patterns build up. So Amy, of course, went to church when she was little. She didn't get a lot out of it because she couldn't hear it. But
How did she? Is she a Christian? Is she following Jesus? So how did she learn to become
a
Christian?
Well, when she went to the Nebraska School for the Deaf in Omaha, there was both a Catholic and a Lutheran church nearby that offered instruction. And we were Lutheran, and so Amy was confirmed in the Bethlehem Lutheran Church for the Deaf. So she was, you know, she got her religious instruction the same as my son did. This was something that was important to me, that she would have her religious
instruction. One of the places I sent notice about this show, I think it's called the Northside Church in Miami, I think, in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
A huge church which accepts the disabled and really showcases them. So
that's fantastic.
Yes, you know, maybe after we get off the air, I'll get you the information. You know,
yes,
where
and
they
I hope they'd be interested in getting the book, like to put in their church library, because all their members may not be able to afford a copy, but the church library could put in one, and then other people. It would be really helpful. The book was written. That brings me to a point I wanted to bring out. There was four reasons we wrote the book.
Yes.
One was to enlighten professionals, because I found, and most other parents of a child with a disability have found, you go to the doctor and they say, do this, do that, do the other, goodbye, see you next week or whatever. And what they look at is a deaf child as opposed to a child who is deaf or
who has a disability.
They identify it as a disability, not a child. And these are people. These are children. These are loved little people here.
Exactly.
So first of all, it was to enlighten professionals. Secondly, and I think we talked about this a lot, is to encourage parents, that the book will be very encouraging to parents. Third, it was written, Amy's part especially, to inspire younger disabled people who maybe don't get to see any older disabled people in their own net, you know, other deaf people or other blind people. And then it was written to just educate general public, people like yourself who want to learn more about another person's life and what it is like. And so the book is very encouraging to parents with any sort of a disability they're dealing with.
And did you also give resources where parents can contact different organizations?
We do have some resources listed in there. And of course, the internet now is a wonderful resource for all kinds of things, which wasn't available a number of years ago. And Amy discusses deaf culture, and she also discusses autism, which is spelled AUDISM.
I've never heard
prejudice.
That.
Prejudice towards people who do not speak, which applies not only to deaf, but mainly autistic people or people that might have some other speech. And they are looked down on in their daily life because they don't speak. So much of the world is, and it's been through some of these organizations that have worked to get captioning on TV and to get video relay systems so that the deaf and other people who don't speak can still communicate, you know, with other people via telephone and whatever. But they suffer a lot of, you know,
strange
look. Discrimination, yes. Because they don't, yes, speak. Because immediately, right, people assume you don't have any intelligence if you don't,
right,
speak.
We are running out of time. First of all, I want to thank you so much, Rebecca, for your wonderful, wonderful presentation. I want people to know about the book. I want people to know about Amy. And it's Amy Sines, right? A mother,
yes,
and her deaf daughter and their stories. And,
mm-hmm,
they can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and then they can contact you directly at amysigns@cox.net. And your website is HTTP, I'm not too good with saying these things, :// www.rebecca, which is R-E-B-E-C-C-A, Willman, W-I-L-L-M-A-N, Gernon, G-E-R-N-O-N, writer, W-R-I-T-E-R, .com, or is there a dash after Gernon?
There's a little hyphen in between.
Hyphen.
Just my name. I'm certain if you type in my name, Rebecca Willman Gernon, you'll find it if you put it in your search engine. There is a Rebecca Gernon who's a doctor, and that's,
oh,
not me. She's a doctor,
okay,
in Kansas City. So you type in Rebecca Willman Gernon or Rebecca,
yes,
Gernon, you'll get Rebecca Gernon, the writer. You will get my website.
In New Orleans, right?
So I am in New Orleans.
Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Oh,
God,
thank you for having
you.
Me, Eve. Thank,
oh,
it's you.
It's a blessing. And God bless Amy. And I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. And please feel free to contact Rebecca either to buy her book or have her come and speak. I think you're wonderful. I think your background as a counselor and in psychology is what God gave you to know how to deal with all of that and to teach others
thank
how
you.
To do it.
That's so encouraging.
I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And people, we need to know how to treat any person who has disabilities, not to dismiss them, but give them a chance because they can achieve fantastically well, as has Amy through her mother. God bless you all. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever other holidays you have. And again, thank you so much, Rebecca. You have
thank
a
you
blessed.
For having me, Eve. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you for being with me. I enjoyed you, too. God,
mm-hmm,
bless you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem.